Well, we sure enjoyed our time with you, Mike. It was thank you so much for coming, and people are already asking about when are you going to come again. So,
yeah. Well, some of it will be when you feel it's the right time to ask me to come. Really, I think that's the key in this. You know, I'm never gonna probably ask to go anywhere. So, but I will respond if there's an invitation. You know, if everyone feels it's the right time and the right thing to do. So, yeah. So, you got anything specifically you want to go through today?
Well, I got a couple of things. Unless Joe, you want to go first?
No, you go ahead, Peter.
All right. Well, one thing I was wondering in some of our talks, when we were just hanging out, and then also in the meeting, one of the meetings that we had here in Atlanta, you mentioned about a Anglican priest that has taken your stuff and written kind of like a little course book or something. I was wondering, is it possible to get a copy of that or find out where we could get that from him, or is he?
It's more at this point in time. He's run one sort of 6 week program course on one night a week for 6 weeks. I have the outline of the sessions that he sent me. I haven't got the actual material he used, but he's on holiday at the minute. So
okay.
When he comes back, we're going to look at how we can roll that out amongst other churches here, and other groups here who are really at a level where they just need to get the basics of God is doing something new. But he did it in a really, really good way. I mean, and he's great at relating to people who are just exploring or just becoming open to something. And you know, he it was positive. You know, there was activation exercises as part of it, and understanding the quantum realm and how God, you know, operates in the unseen. And so, but it was done at a level that drew people into it. You know, rather than, you know, I just forgotten really sort of what it was like not to know stuff. So it's not easy to totally relate to where people aren't knowing anything or just beginning. But it's good. And once we've sort of looked at it and how we're going to use it, then I mean, hopefully that would become available for others to engage with. But I can probably send you the outline just to give you the titles and the description of the session so you can see what it was in it. Because they're very good. And he related it back to church history where there were saints of old who were involved in supernatural heavenly things, you know. So it wasn't like, oh, this is just not new. This has always been there. We've just not engaged it and have lost a lot of the understanding of it.
Right.
It was good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, cool. I just piqued my curiosity, and a couple of people had asked me about if I had gotten anything from you on that. So, okay. Well, my other big burning question this week is, you know, you read the news that's happening right now, you know, over there in Iraq and other places of the world, and that kind of puts fuel to the fire in me, just to it makes me, well, I don't know if that's what makes me, but I just have this urgency in my spirit that, man, we need to get moving. We got so much to do, and you know, it seems like we still have so far to go as far as learning how to move in this stuff and really being able to bring the government of God to the earth and be able to start start affecting some of these world events. I mean, obviously, we're still working on our own Jerusalems and our own families and stuff like that, but yet it seems like the season, I mean, the enemy just seems to be pouring out more and more stuff, and there seems to be an absence of those that really can move in those levels to affect things. And so because of that, partly because of that, I just feel this real urgency to get moving and get some stuff done. Sure. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think you've got to look at it from the perspective of that God is not surprised or shocked by anything. And there are those that gather in terms of, you know, the Galactic Council, and there's that meeting of that 70 from February onwards engaging things, and they put a limit on certain things that can be done and not done. Where the enemy has access to do things through legal right, then unless you remove that access, then you can't stop the enemy doing what is legal right. I mean, Jesus basically could not stop the enemy sifting Peter. God could not stop the enemy testing Job, because there were things that gave the enemy a legal access to do it. And so in some of the things that go on, the only way you can have an actual effect in those things right now is if you have legal authority within the sphere that you're operating in to administer into that. And even if you have that, there's still a limit to what you can do in a national sense because of the complexity of what's going on in a national sense. You know, it's not just one person can do something and change a whole nation in just by going to a mountain, and you know, it takes the government of God established in that nation. So, you know, where is their bench of three? You know, where are their authority structures in terms of patterned after heaven? And you'll find that a lot of the places where these things go on are places that structure isn't in place, and they haven't got an embassy of heaven on earth, and so they are fighting everything on a natural horizontal plane, and you know, I personally don't get involved a lot in current affairs and events around what's going on around the world. I think a lot of it can create fear and tension and promote this sort of negative thing, oh my word, all this stuff's happening. But if you put it into the bigger picture, you know, the kingdom is advancing somewhere, they estimate, you know, a couple of 100,000 people every day.
Wow.
Above the death rate. You know, so there's a huge advance in the kingdom. Now, we're not seeing that often in the Western world yet, but in places like South America and in Africa and in China and other places, there's a huge increase in the kingdom. So if you go back to, you know, the beginning and see, you know, where they were told to, yes, go to Jerusalem to the ends of the earth, and you had, what, 500 people? You know, when Jesus went back into heaven? 500 people gathered, you had 12 people, then 120 people, then 500 people, and then on the day of Pentecost, you get 3,000 people. So you get 3,500 people out of a world population at the time, and see, work out the percentage. Now sort of see how the kingdom has grown. It is like a little bit of leaven in a lump, and it is leavening the lump. Now, obviously, we don't want it to continue at that sort of level. We want it to increase, and we want it to see greater dimension. But sometimes we can look around and think, oh, this is terrible. everything is really bad. Actually, it isn't. But often the sort of presentation of, oh, these terrible things are happening, and oh, poor us, and it builds that mindset that, hey, we need rescuing, rather than, no, actually, we are overcoming. It's just most people don't see it, and it isn't put into context of the bigger picture. And we are in a process of setting up a whole new order of how God's kingdom is going to function. That isn't going to happen overnight. It's going to take, for me, it's going to take a generation. I believe that's why it's so important to raise up mentors now to mentor the next generation of Christians. Not the next generation of young people, but the next generation of Christians of every age, to unite that generation, to bring them together in the purposes of God and free them and release them to be the supernatural demonstrators of the kingdom that they're called to be. Then we'll start to actually see pretty powerful changes. But does that mean everything's going to be rosy and everything's going to be wonderful? Not in the slightest, because we're in a battle. And I believe that we're going to see a huge shaking of the world systems. And to be honest, I think some of the things that are happening right now are shaking people's out of their complacency and actually shaking them to say, what would I do if I was in that situation? Would I renounce Christ? Would I run? Would I hide? What would I do? And am I in a place where I can live differently in those dimensions? Well, we have to teach people to be able to stand in the face of persecution and everything there's likely to be and overcome and begin to demonstrate what it's like to live under the laws of heaven on earth, so that, yeah, when people are going to come and try and capture you, you disappear and walk through them, just like Jesus did. Jesus did not live in an environment which was neutral or positive. He lived in a very negative environment where he was demonstrating another kingdom in the midst of a religious system which was designed to persecute him. And so I don't believe that we're going to live in a wonderful position where there's no opposition, but I do believe we'll learn to overcome. And we will demonstrate what it is to live in the power of the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And that means that we will not be subject to the things that the world is going to be subject to, because the mountain of the house of the Lord will be raised up above all those other mountains. And it says in Isaiah 2, and what happens? All the other hills, they'll all stream to the mountain of the house of the Lord, saying, teach us. We want to know how to live in health when all this stuff's going on in the world. We want to know how to live with blessing and when there's famine. Why is it that you've got food? Why is it that you've got provision? There will be, but we have to live that way. And that's why we need to train people to, from the beginning, learn how to engage their own lives, administer their own mountains, and then we will see people raised up who will begin to operate in our generation on the Galactic Council. Because the Galactic Council, as it sits, has got very few people who are currently living in this realm. But actually, it should be everyone living in this realm. Every generation should have those that serve the purpose of God in that generation, and there will be those that are given authority in that realm while they're alive. But that isn't the case right now. So there's some stuff we need to do. And when we have got our generation operating in the fullness of sonship and authority, yeah, we will be able to have and expand cities of refuges or embassies of heaven so that we push the darkness back. And I believe Jesus will come back and just finish the job, because that's what it basically says he's going to do. Now, we will have done everything necessary for the church to have been without spot and wrinkle and has fulfilled its destiny in restoring all things. And then when we've done the job, God comes and hands the kingdom over to the Father, and we enter into another sphere, if you like, of what's coming. But yeah, so it's not that I'm unconcerned, but I think if we do what God's calling us to do, we will eventually be able to deal with a lot of those things. But not necessarily in the way that people think. And I think we've got to be open for mandates from God to deal with things in different ways. You know, and it's like, okay, so what are people expecting right now? You know, the Christians in Iraq are living in a hostile environment. You know, those in Iran are living in a hostile environment. It's a Muslim country. Now, how are we going to affect that? Well, we're not going to affect it by bombing them or trying to change the political system. The only way we're going to ultimately affect that is demonstrating the kingdom in such a way that those people stream to the church and look to the solutions for everything that's going on, whether they're Muslims or Jews or any other religion. They will see that none of that works. But what works is a true demonstration of sonship in the kingdom. You know, that's my view. Those that feel that they have authority in those areas to intercede, then go ahead. But just make sure you intercede from above, not below. Because otherwise you end up under what's the prevailing culture and the enemy's power in that culture, rather than above it, looking to administrate it. So I get your urgency in that, yeah, we need to get on with stuff, but you can't rush something that takes building relationship to establish. You know, it can't be a formula, and it's got to be a relationship that's established, so that when we actually do administer righteousness and justice, we do it out of relationship. Because right now, you've got a lot of Christians running around who would basically have God pour down the fire of heaven onto those people. Oh, you would. You know.
I know.
And to be honest, that's not, you know, that's not God's way, is it? It's like, what do we do with our enemies? We bless them. So the best way we can deal with those things is to see them turn to Jesus in salvation. Not try and bomb them out of existence or change their political system or do any of those natural things, but to find the supernatural solution. You know, what is the supernatural solution? What is the solution that God has? What are the mandates that we've been given in these situations? And I think those Christians who do not come out of a position of righteousness and intimacy with God will be the same people who bomb pro-life people, who bomb people and kill those people who are committing abortions. You know, how mad is that? We're pro-life, but we're going to kill the people that are killing others. I mean, it's nonsense, but that's what can happen when people are coming out of their own emotions and the emotions that they feel and the compassion that they feel, which tries to move them to act in ways of which are not the ways God would want us to act. And I think that's why we have to establish the relationships and the connections with God in intimacy that will enable us to come out of what we see in Him rather than what would come out of our natural reactions. You know, and which will be very different. You know. There we go. Anyway, looks like Peter's disappeared there. So,
and Mike, I know you're giving your view on that. You're not saying, you know, no, thus just, Lord. Yeah. But what I think I hear you saying, in a sense, is, don't get distracted by all the little skirmishes of evil around the planet, because there's nothing different today than there was early on. It's probably been that way all along.
Yeah.
It's just now we have CNN and the internet, that makes that more visible. And it seems to me that this is my opinion, that the new, that, you know, that the news underscores the negative. You know, it sells.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I hear your point. It's what's in the invisible or not so visible advancement is the kingdom. It's like it's happening. That's positive. It's just that the enemy's using intimidation and fear,
yeah,
which is really what he has to say we're losing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's how I would see it. And I think the enemy's tactics have always been to try and intimidate and use fear. And if people are in fear, they're giving access to the enemy to bring in false mindsets and religious systems which will hinder and block us, you know, seeing the kingdom fulfilling the earth and seeing an expansion of the garden so that we subdue and have dominion. And, you know, it's no different than go back, you know, 100 years and look at, you know, where things were then, and then you see things like the First World War, Second World War, totally change the atmosphere within the church to one of optimism to pessimism. So much so that you get to the 50s, 60s, you know, the Cold War, all the negative fear. Well, where's all that fear gone to now? You know, where is all the, oh, well, you know, and all the eschatological, apocalyptical things that were all going to happen in that with certain people being raised up and all that, where does it all go? It's just pages in books that people don't read anymore because in reality they found that things weren't true. All the what ifs and the looking at the Bible from our current news and trying to interpret it by using the news as the interpretive instrument rather than letting the Bible interpret itself produced millions and millions of books of absolute rubbish. Effectively, things like the late great planet Earth and things like that were just an absolute nonsense, but they caught the heart of a generation who were living in fear, and it promoted even more fear and promoted even more, well, we're never going to win, so God, just come and rescue us. And what did it do? It meant we did not sow into the next generation. So all those leading up to the year 2000, they were like, oh, don't, you know, the sort of hyper-Christians, I call them, don't bother to go to university, don't bother to get an education, don't really bother with any of this stuff because Jesus is coming back anyway, so what's the point of investing in the generation? It's all going to be burnt up. And that whole mindset is what the enemy wants to bring on people because it fear brings false doctrines and the demonic doctrines which then pollute the truth and stop people then believing who they really are, and then the enemy doesn't have to do anything because basically we just sit back and let him do whatever he wants because we just believe we've got no authority and power, you know. And I'm not saying we just don't do anything, but we do it out of the revelation that God's given us in relationship with him. So let's go and get the mandates to deal with those things. And if we're not given a mandate, it's because we're not ready and the situation's not there for us to do it yet. You know, and for me, I have no mandate in any of those situations. But other people may have, and if we can teach people what to do with their mandates and how to administer the kingdom, and who knows, actually, who's doing what to actually limit what is going on. Because without the intercession and without the things that are going on, it may be a lot worse. And so we can't tell what it would be like if people weren't praying and weren't interceding and weren't doing whatever. I just feel that not enough people are doing it from the perspective of heaven to have the effect that it will have. But if we train enough people up, then it will work. I mean, I was talking to someone... this is an interesting story. They were basically saying that, you know, they went into heaven and they felt God was giving them a mandate towards somewhere in Africa, and they began to administer that on their mountain, and something about engaging water and in this nation. And within a couple of days, this huge lake had appeared in the desert, in an African country, and it's been in the news, this massive lake. And this sort of person said, well, I'm not really sure if I had anything to do with that, but isn't it a coincidence that I felt called to do something, and I went to my mountain, and I began to declare and call things, and within a couple of days, this huge lake of water appears in a desert. You know, and I think, yeah, what? And I said, well, actually, yeah, I think you did have something to do with that. Because that's the things that we can begin to do when you start engaging and looking from the mandate from God's perspective. And he's looking for people to get involved. You know, he really is looking for people to say, yeah, here I am, use me. You know, we had someone on Sunday morning, and while I was ministering here, and I was doing an exercise, and he's in one of our leadership teams, and he basically just went off, you know, and the person sitting next to him thought, oh, he's going to spit, I'm going to nudge him and wake him up, but God nudged them and said, no, he's not there. So eventually he comes around, and so I talked to him yesterday. I said, well, what was going on? I said, well, he says, well, I just felt that there was this situation in Russia, you know, and there was this couple and this child, and you know, I just felt that in my spirit, I went there and I ministered to it, you know. Now, because he made himself available, you know, situation in some people in Canada, there were several of them praying, and they all went together in a vision to 1800, and in 1800 they ministered into this house where there was this child who was sick, and ministered healing to the child. And they were like, well, what happened? Where were you when it took place? Well, we'd stepped into heaven. So, okay, so you stepped into a place which you had access to time, and you were available, and God used you to answer a prayer in 1800. Why not? Probably in 1800 there weren't too many people in Oklahoma who were going around ministering healing. So he was looking for people now to answer a prayer then. You know, and why not? And I was talking to another lady this week in one of the other hangouts that she was in the same thing, stepping into heaven, looking for what God wanted, and she found herself in Pearl Harbor in a gun emplacement with a guy who'd run out of bullets. And the guy looked at her and cried out that he was out of ammunition. She opened her hands, and a whole magazine of ammunition just began to come out of her hands. Now, it's like, okay, sounds a bit bizarre, but now we're engaging in heaven, and we're stepping in. God has access to use us in those things. You know, Ian's been talking about trans-relocation for years. This is just not trans-relocation in space, it's trans-relocation in time, as well as space. To effect something that answers the cry that God has heard, because God's not, it's all now to him, isn't it? You know, it's not linear for God. He's not in linear time. It's all now. So he's looking for those, hey, who's available to answer that prayer? Well, go back a generation. You found that people, when they first started praying in tongues, all of a sudden felt called to intercede in tongues and with groans that they didn't know what they were interceding for. And then they discover a few days later, someone says, oh, at this time of the night, I was in this terrible situation. And they find, hey, that was the very time that God's responded and I started praying strongly in tongues. Because that was the level of revelation that people had then. And God used whatever revelation he had to effect answering prayer. Now he's answering it in ways which freak a lot of people out. But for me, I think this is just progression. It's progressive revelation of what God can do. Now, I think, okay, I've heard three stories of that in the last couple of weeks. So, hey, God's doing something. He just is looking for available people to use. Now, who knows how many people were rescued in some of these situations that we've been talking about supernaturally. But the more people that are available, the more God is going to be able to use them. So I guess the urgency is, let's begin to equip people. But we have to do it in the right way, and that's the key. It has to be relational, and it has to be developed. It isn't going to happen with a laying on of hands and a one impartation, and everyone is operating in full heavenly authority. We have to mature into sonship, and that's why we've got to learn how to do it, and practice and re-practice and keep practicing until we are fluently functioning in everything that we're called to do as sons. But go back 12 months and see the change in 12 months for all of us. You know, in terms of 12 months ago, you know, I hadn't even set out on any of these mentoring sessions. You know, you had only just started to engage thinking, wow, there's a lot more to come. So in 12 months, a lot has happened. In the next 12 months, a lot more is going to happen. You know, because think, you know, you have a multiplication available now, because it's not just one or two or three of us. We've got whole groups of people beginning to explore and to engage. So, yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, Mike, to Peter, can I jump in? To your point of urgency, you know, the sense of urgency to do something. I'm not suggesting that this is your motive at all, Peter. I know for me, in my experience, my personal experience, I liken it to Moses killing the Egyptian.
Mm, yeah.
He wants to do something, and it's out of righteousness, but it's not necessarily what God tells him to do. It's his own way, and obviously it, you know, derails things for quite some time. And so back to, for the lack of a better term, I guess, err. If you had to err one direction, this is what it sounds like to me. It's like focus on relationship. It doesn't mean that you stay there, that you never want to go to responsibility, but focus on relationship and ask God and make yourself available. And when he says go, you go.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not suggesting I have a lot of experience at that in this realm, if you will. But in the process of maturing to sonship, to me that presents another tension where it's like, well, I'm in the process of maturing, and do I wait till I mature and then God goes, or as I go, he gives me as I'm maturing in sonship and relationship, he gives little excursions in responsibility, maybe like you did with the disciples?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Because the more intimate you become, the easier it is to hear what God's saying. You know, because, you know, both pathways of engagement, they run parallel with one another in that as we're hearing God, we're beginning to ask him, well, what do you want me to do? You know, it's just, in a sense, you have to sort of help people to understand that there are two pathways, but it's not like, well, we're going to stand on one leg at the minute and hop up and down, and then we'll stand on the other leg and hop up and down, and we'll be in balance all that time because we'll be tired standing on one leg. It's like we stand on both legs, but actually we're just favoring this side, and God will release things, because hopefully what we'll be asking him is those things. You know, if we're daily surrendering to him, yoking ourselves to Jesus, surrendering the lordship of our lives to him so that he's on the throne, the whole purpose of that flow of relationship is worship. And worship is, how do I obey you today? How do I serve you today? How do I surrender to you today? And so, although you won't necessarily, you know, to start with, you don't necessarily learn everything there is to know about all the courts and all those things, when you're focusing on hearing the voice of God and understanding how God speaks, but of course God is going to start directing you every day. You may not get the fullness, but a lot of people have got some insight and some things that they understand, even though they're not fully functioning it. And if we're available, then God will use us. You know, and you know, if we're engaging the drawing near or engaging the throne of grace, well, we're engaging the throne of grace for what? Mercy and grace, divine ability to do something. And so none of it is totally inactive. It's just the focus is I want to learn how to engage God in the intimacy so that I can then flow out of, like Jesus, only doing what I see the Father doing. You know, I mean, it's pretty unlikely that the Father's going to show somebody who's never stepped onto a mountain the Galactic Council and call him to go and seat there, because they wouldn't even know how to function. So there is a progressive revelation, and I think, you know, even in, you know, teaching people these things, it's like, yeah, we go from being a steward to a friend to a Lord. And in friendship, that's where we build our relationship. So in lordship, it doesn't change the fact that we're friends. We just operate in a higher level of authority. He hasn't changed. We just get entrusted with more authority and power. You know, he's still King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We've just gone from the friendship area where we were discovering how we could engage him in these ways to then now he's entrusted us with this to operate. But you get loads of little things along the way. You know, it's just as we're available, he will use us, I think, in different progressive ways. So, yeah, I don't think it's, we shouldn't be, well, I'm not doing anything right now because I'm just focusing on relationship. Because the very nature of relationship is intimacy will lead to obedience. And so, yeah, you have to balance it. But for those who don't want the relationship and just want to do stuff, that won't work. Because God won't entrust you with lordship unless you become a friend. You know, and there are so many people who are good stewards but are not letting go of the things they're stewarding to then take on the relationship as friends. And many ministries, I think, are being challenged by this right now, I think. I can see in the realm of the Spirit that God is calling to people, I want you to become my friends. You were a friend once, but you've got so caught up in the busyness of stewarding what I gave you, you've lost the first love. You know, and I think the Ephesian church was a prime example of that. They were doing all these wonderful things, and God said, yeah, yeah, they're great, but you've lost the motivation and the heart, which was me, and first love for me. And so it's so easy to get so busy that you haven't got time for God, even though you're doing things for him. But you're doing things for him, not things with him. And there's a huge difference between doing things for God and doing things with God. To do things with him, you have to be walking with him. To do things for him, he can be anywhere. And you can be still carrying on doing all the things. Which was why, you know, people don't realize sometimes when the anointing leaves what they're doing. And just carry on striving and struggling harder and harder in the flesh with less and less anointing because God moved and they didn't recognize he'd gone. You know? So, yeah, I totally agree. You know, as we pursue intimacy, he will continually give us opportunities to come out of that relationship in greater levels of authority and power. And of course, opening up our gateways is about creating an atmosphere of the kingdom around us where God's presence can be manifested in a practical sense. You know, whether that ministers healing or deliverance to people around us because they just come into contact with us, because we are letting God flow through us. You know, yeah.
I've got a question about the process. Peter, did you have another question? I didn't want to step on top of your agenda.
No, go ahead, Joe. That's fine. That's
fine. I'll try to be brief. The only way I know to frame my question, instead of it being, you know, hypothetical, is through my own current experience. but that's not intended to get into a Joe counseling session or anything like that. Yeah. But it seems like, I'm curious what your experience was like, Mike, or what you see other people going through. But since you were here, like I've been at this since March, you know, gateways and pursuing and been pretty diligent, as I shared with you, about presenting myself just as a sacrifice daily, just sticking to the process, just staying with it and treading down that path. And it's been very delightful and fruitful until about 2.5 weeks ago. And it's like I went into but seriously, and that's just after you were here, it's not anything to do with you, but just the same time where I just feel like I've gone into vertigo. And it's like I can't, I'm having difficulty hearing God, I'm seeing God, and it's as if all the crud in my life has surfaced. Marriage, just issues, financial issues, issues with my youngest son, you know, all that stuff, and it's just like almost overwhelming. And you mentioned this, you know, a couple of things that I'm curious about, you know, this rescuing versus overcoming. And I find myself more in a posture right now as I'm presenting myself to the Lord. You know, I'm actively presenting, but once I'm there, I'm like passive. It's just like, you've got to get this out of my life. I don't know how to separate it.
Yeah.
I can't even put my finger on it. It's insidious. I don't know what's there. But to me, it's living proof that there is a lot of junk in my trunk, you know, and where I've traded and haven't known it, and where, you know, where there's stuff in my generations. And not that I want to focus so much on that, but it is, at this point at least, the water level's like right here,
yeah.
You know. And I'm like, ah, oh, you know. And the challenge is, you know, Father, I mean, give me some kind of breakthrough, rescue me, or show me how to take a step to overcome, you know, so I can stay ahead of this thing from a hope standpoint, you know, just hope, really believe that I can get through this and there'd be real change in my life. I mean, I'm just starting to see, you know, in the rearview mirror, it's like, God, I mean, what a less than mediocre Christian existence I've had. I mean, really.
I understand what you're saying. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
so I'm not even sure really what my question is as much as.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I've been through it myself. It's like we have to accept that when things are going really well, we don't learn to overcome. You know, and God takes us through seasons in our life where there are sometimes the north wind blows. And it's like, what do we do when the north wind blows and it's cold? When before, you know, Song of Solomon is an example of the different seasons that can take place within our Christian walk and how we react to them and relate to them. I've been through similar things myself. I found that I was proactive in looking to clear and deal with certain things, but there were certain things that actually I couldn't see. And although I dealt with everything that I saw and what God showed me when I asked him, there were things at a deeper level that were motivations, heart issues that I didn't see. And it took the trials, which is what it says, you know, in James, treat it all joy, brothers, when you engage various trials. And it's like we all, oh, that's like, well, I wish that verse wasn't in the Bible. You know, and if we're honest, it's like, who wants trials? You know, well, in Acts it says, through many tribulations we enter the kingdom. And so the reality is, God knows what he's doing, and you need to think, yes, there is a good scripture that says he will never let you face that which you're not able to overcome. But the issue is overcoming, not rescue. So if our prayers are, God, get me out of this, rather than give me the strategy to overcome this, therefore show me the roots why this is happening in my life. Because everything that happens has a legal right to come about. Now, there are obviously things that just stuff happens and we just say stuff happens, but when you're looking to press in and you've got this, okay, yeah, I'm really looking to engage at a deeper level. I'm going, and all of a sudden, bang. Well, God always uses what the enemy's plans are for harm and turns it around so that we can get good out of it. But our reaction to that will determine how long the season lasts. And, you know, we have a phrase, you know, you just get to go around the mountain again if you didn't go up it the first time. Because sometimes we try and go round the mountain when we should have gone up the mountain to deal with what was on the mountain and then see from a higher perspective so we can then see where we're going. If we go round the mountain thinking we're going to try and avoid this, what's going on, then we just get to go right round the mountain and come back to the same point when we have to go up it. And so we encourage people when they get to situations like that to take a view. Okay, God, what is it that you are going to do in this situation to train me, to help me to be the overcomer that I know that I am? And then we start asking questions differently, like, okay, what is the source of this issue? What is my strategy to have legal authority to change this? And so, okay, so I take the court system as one of the major areas where what is the accusations that the enemy has against me right now that has given him authority to do these things in my life or to in my circumstances that I should be ruling over, I seem to be unable to rule. Why? So, okay, I'm going to take this situation, I'm going to take my marriage to the court, and what are the accusations? I mean, I've done this recently in marriage stuff, you know, having come back from being away, you know, I had some time while I was away, not much, because I didn't get much time to think other than answering all the questions, but I got a little bit of time, you know, to consider, okay, where are things at, you know, how can we move things forward, and different things like that. So I went to the court and got a clear understanding of what the accusations were. And then because I'm sort of, when I get those things, then I'm like, okay, you know, what's the strategy? I went to wisdom. I said, I need wisdom to know how to deal with this. What am I supposed to do? So it's like, okay, yeah, I understand this is the accusation. What am I going to do about it? And actually, what's the key in this accusation? So it's like, okay, so I know enough to know that something has been robbed and Satan's got hold of it in his trophy room. So I went to get back what had been stolen from me and did and saw what had been stolen and took it back. Now I'm now responsible for outworking that in reality on the ground, which means I have to then behave and do things differently than I've done before, because I'm now going to take the authorization I have to deal with this accusation and not operate in the same way. Therefore, I have to change. Now, I have to change. That's I can't say my wife has to change, although, you know, I'd love her to change in certain ways. She'd love me to change in certain ways, but we have to focus on I have to change so I can deal with me. And when I've dealt with me, then I have a greater measure of authority to release blessing and favor, because I'm no longer operating under the accusation that I've been operating under. So the enemy could say, yeah, you've been doing this. That means I can do this. So, okay, I need to stop doing that. But how can I just stop doing that? Because I didn't even know that was something I was doing. But now I've got revelation. Now I can take that as a mandate. I am now authorized to change my thinking and my behavior and to align them with what God's purposes are in this. So, okay, now I'm going to take my wife to the ark, and I'm going to carry her in my heart, and I'm going to look into what does my relationship with her look like before sin messed it up. So what is God's intention that I should be? Oh, there's a good scripture that says, oh, I need to love my wife like Christ loved the church. Oh, okay. So what does that look like? So I need to look into what it looks like in him, so that then I can begin to bring that into what it looks like in me today and begin to change what tomorrow will be like. what we're looking to do is change tomorrow before we've dealt with today. So I don't want tomorrow to be like today. Well, it won't be like today if we deal with today. And the problems is when we get a whole host of things all sort of coming around us all at one time. Where we start, you know, how do we see the starting point for it? And again, you know, that's where I just ask God directly. You know, and then I would go to him and say, be looking at, okay, where do I start? You know, what's the first accusation? Now, to me, it's always going to be the most intimate in relational. The relationship is always going to be the first point. Because if there's an issue in my marriage, then I'm not in unity. Therefore, we're not operating in authority together. Therefore, things can operate in our children that wouldn't be if we were in unity. If we're not in unity together and we're not one heart together and we're not in that, then we cannot command the blessing, because the blessing and the financial blessing and the other blessings come as a result of unity. Because when brothers dwell together in unity, there the blessing is commanded. So I always look back, where's the relationship issue in this? Because that will be the key to us dealing with all the others together. So, you know, in your situation, not wanting to get into the counseling side of it, but look for the relational issue, and then when the relational issue has been dealt with and you're together, then you can look at the other issues together, not on your own. Because then you multiply your effectiveness. Because one can put 1,000 to flight and 2, 10,000 to flight. So you multiply your effectiveness when you bring unity. So you have an exponential authority when you're together, which is why the enemy always wants to destroy relationships first. You know, if he can get access into a relationship, then he has access to do the other things that wouldn't have had access when the relationship was correct and you had a provision and protection around you because you were together. And I think that's, you know, that's how I see these things. We can't avoid the situations, but we can find the solutions by looking at the solution and not the problem. Jesus is always going to be the solution, and if I look at it from his perspective, then I can see that there is hope, because his will and purpose for me is that I will be an overcomer, and I will live in overcoming, and I will live in unity, and I will live in blessing, and I will live in health, and I will live in wholeness, in all those things, you know. And so when I look into him, I see that, which then enables me to see, then I need to frame that into my day. So when I'm on my mountain, I frame my day with, I live under the favor and blessing of God today. Every situation that I face today, I will have the wisdom of God to be able to deal with that out of righteousness and justice. So I declare those things over my life each day, so that I walk in that favor and blessing. And that when I come up against an obstacle, I'm expecting to have the authority to overcome it, or the wisdom or the insight to overcome it, whatever it is. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm perfect in it. I'm still working through my own things, and I'm still learning how to put this into practice more and more, you know. But often the darkest time is before dawn. If we don't allow fear to keep us in the dark, because fear will always rob us of the love of God, and the love of God is what will bring the revelation that God is for me and his favor and his it's because religion will say, oh, you must have done something wrong and God is punishing you, or all that negative stuff, you know. And it isn't like that. God's favor is on you. His countenance over you is smiling even through the difficult times, and that's what we hold on to. You know, he is smiling, therefore he has a solution to this if I seek and draw near to him. Now, I know it's when you've been near to him, it's hard. I mean, I went through this for 4 months when, you know, I'd had 2 years of daily intimacy, and then 4 months of I can't see and hear anything.
I remember that from your testimony. And I think what I remember you saying that you gleaned from that is God taught you to trust him even though you couldn't see or hear. I mean, it's just like...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a similar thing. You're saying, wow, I've been pursuing this stuff for March and I've been getting breakthroughs, and then all of a sudden, bang. You know, now for me, God took me through that deliberately because he wanted to show me my level of trust. And I'm not saying that that's what's going on with you specifically, but you can use, hey, my testimony and say, okay, the answer is in finding trust in God in this, so that God walks me through this and I learn to overcome and grow through it, rather than I'm trying to escape or run from it and hope that God is going to take me out of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the people that you're going to mentor are going to go through the same things as well. And so your testimony, you can give them, and they will take that testimony, and an atmosphere of faith will arise in them, because you're going to walk, you will walk through this.
Mm-hmm.
You just keep your eyes fixed on the solution, which is Jesus, rather than the problems, and then deal with the problems from the perspective of being in the solution,
right?
From a heavenly perspective,
right?
And so that's
certainly that's part of my reason for asking the question. It's like, you know, I know there are people going to come behind. It sounded like you had gone through something similar. I know everybody's got a different, you know, personal manifestation of the experience, but you know, it's just like, what? That's really my question. It's like, kind of, what's happening? You know, Mayday, Mayday.
Well, you know, it's a season.
Thank God.
It's a north wind season. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, some people call some of these things the dark night of the soul. They're intense things. You know, that was how I would have described my dark season. It was almost like, you know. But I believe that a lot of people prolong those seasons because they don't look to the solution. You know, they keep looking at the problem and coming under the guilt and shame and condemnation of the enemy, because, well, this shouldn't happen to good Christians who are looking to pursue God, and they're like, oh, wow, I've been doing my gateway stuff for this time, and now this has happened. And it's like, because the enemy will try and twist everything to put a negative spin on it, to try and put you off, to say, well, look what happens when you try and deal with this stuff. You know, rather than, okay, oh, this has just come to the surface because I have been coming closer to God, and now God knows that I'm at a level that I can handle something more. And he will equip me in handling this and overcoming it, and I will be stronger through it. But even in it, you still need the strategy that comes from God, which is why, you know, I go and look at, okay, God, show me where to start, you know, and then you're walking with him in it, and he'll lead you through it, you know, and you will learn lots of different things which will be very helpful for others, you know, because there's nothing better than testimony to encourage others that you've been through this, and actually, yes, there is light at the end of the tunnel, even though it's a pinprick, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And if you keep walking through the tunnel rather than getting out of the tunnel by the way you got into it, you will get to the light. But if you keep turning around, looking back, you won't see the light, even, and you won't walk towards what is there. And that's why a lot of people turn back, because it's too hard. I'm going to go back to what I know. You know, what are my defaults? I'm going to go back. No, keep going forward. That's the key. Keep putting those things you've learned so far into practice, even though that might be really hard, and then embrace putting them into practice, you know, in a systematic way. Like, okay, I'm going to deal with this first, and I'm going to deal with that. I'm not going to try and deal with everything all in one go, because that's when we get overwhelmed. You know, find the first thing to deal with and deal with that first. Then that will give you a platform to deal with the other things. Yeah. Yeah.
Good work. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome.